I'm Charles Arthur, and this week I am Tech Weekly. That's because while everyone else at The Guardian is off giving birth to babies and PhDs, or in the case of Bobby Johnson, on holiday, I'm manning the fort and keeping this show on the go. In this week's programme, I've caught up with Ray Sangster, the president of Flip Video, the manufacturer of those handy handheld video recorders, which was recently acquired by Cisco. He'll explain what the future has in store for the two businesses. Then, later, I'll be hearing from James Strong of Atomic Floyd. He's a young British entrepreneur whose company makes precision-built headphones, and he gives me a lesson in the science of speakers in your ears and explains why it's better to build headphones out of stainless steel. In between all that, we'll squeeze in this week's tech news too. Go to the front page of YouTube at nearly any time, and in amongst all the thumbnails of selected videos will be clips of tortured teens or opinionated octogenarians who've shot their own amateur footage in front of their computer screens with a webcam. But over the past few years, a reasonably priced gadget has emerged which has literally put video into the hands of web users and meant it need not necessarily be wired up to a computer. The Flip point-and-shoot video camera, with its one-button operation, has taken the world by storm, despite really only being available in North America and the UK until now. Its line has gradually expanded to include models that shoot in higher resolutions, such as the Ultra HD recently reviewed in the Guardian Technology section. And the success of the company led to it being bought by the network hardware company Cisco Systems for $590 million last March. Flip's president in Europe, Middle East and Africa, Ray Sangster, came into the studio recently to talk to me about the prospects for the company in the future and the competition the Flip faces from the more advanced mobile phones. But I was still puzzled by the acquisition, so I asked, why did Cisco want to buy Flip?
The growth of video is going to impact what's going to happen on the internet over the next 3-4 years, and the growth is pretty phenomenal, either using video on products such as this or on phones, etc. So by acquiring a company like Flip at the front end, the consumer end, it will ultimately impact what's happening at the back end.
But that's sort of like arguing that Google could buy a newspaper because, you know, lots of people read newspapers online. I mean, I don't quite see why it benefits Cisco to own a company which makes stuff when surely Cisco is making routers, it's making the equipment which basically lets the stuff pass through it.
So there is a division of Cisco, which I was not aware of, called Consumer Business Group. And they're, through acquisitions of such products as Flip, going to grow that business at the front end. The two key brands today, one being Flip, the second one is Linksys.
Which is basically routers, home networking.
Yeah, exactly.
But again, I can't quite see the synergy, so to speak. I can understand why you would want to have, you know, as Cisco, the big networking company, why you might want to have your routers in people's homes, because then you know that the router at one end is going to talk to the router at the other end quite happily. But again, I still don't quite see where it is that the video camera, that you look at it and think, well, as a networking company, this is exactly what I want to own.
The dynamics will change. Where Linksys are going prior to the acquisition of us, and where we are going, there are synergies moving forward.
What sort of synergies?
I cannot discuss those at this moment in time, unfortunately, because they haven't been finalized in terms of commitment for product.
What sort of typical buyers do you have? Who is the typical buyer?
Basically, there are two spectrums. One is when we have the ultra range, it varies from preteens all the way through to the grandparents who can use the product, but mothers, women invariably are the main purchaser of the product.
Why do you think that is?
Decision maker in the home, birthday gifts, Christmas gifts, whatever it's going to be. But we found another category, which we refer to as the MP3 player category, basically, 13 to 24, 25-year-olds, that when we spoke to them, they said, yeah, we love the Ultra, but you know, we're used to plugging into the back of a laptop, desktop, and it will recharge. We're used to having something smaller in our pocket, et cetera, et cetera. So we come out with the Minnow range. Interestingly enough, doing research and talking to these people, they said, well, could you actually put the screen on the front? Because we don't use the camera as our parents would use it. We point the lens at ourselves. We would like to see what we're recording. So we brought out only 2 weeks ago in the UK the Chrome version of the Minnow.
You face competition from people who are carrying around phones all the time, and especially now people who have iPhones, given that the iPhone has the capability to record video.
Competition is good. Let's start off there.
Everyone says that, but everyone thinks that competition is a real pain. They'd much rather have the whole market.
Yes, of course. But competition is good. Competition is healthy. Mobile phones, fantastic technology. But what we're able to demonstrate is, and you know, I challenge you, take the mobile phone out of your pocket and I can switch this camera on in 3 seconds. I can take a 5 second clip and I can send it as an email or onto a social networking site within 5-6 seconds and have it anywhere in the world.
What does it have Wi-Fi? But it doesn't have Wi-Fi built in.
No, but I can connect it to my laptop, which is connected.
But that needs you to have the laptop, whereas someone with the iPhone.
But we'll come to. We were talking about mobiles just for a moment. I will come on to the iPhone in a second.
The iPhone is a mobile, of course.
Yeah, let me come to that in a moment. You don't pay £35, £40, £45 a month to use a flip. The number of iPhones out there today with this capability is low, but will grow.
Well, it's 1 million, isn't it? Yeah. Apple said that it sold 1 million the first few days.
Yeah.
And Flip had sold about 2 million in the world earlier this year, I think.
Well, we're well beyond that number, as you can imagine.
How many is it now, roughly?
At the time of the acquisition, which was in the public domain, we were over 3 million units. The point I make is, though, that people who are using Flip are not associating it with a mobile phone. They're socially networking today with a laptop, with a desktop, and it crosses all boundaries from preteens to grandparents. Apple have brought out a great product, but it is still focused on a certain sector, not across the whole spectrum at this moment in time. So competition is good.
My reading of how mobile video on mobile phones is being used is that's the sort of social networking thing, that people take a picture of a cat or whatever or something funny and they pass it around to their friends virally, whereas the Flip tends to be for longer form video. The question, I suppose, is can that longer form survive as mobile phones get better storage of video and as they are able to get better resolution of video?
The average clip that's being downloaded in the States is 2 minutes, 2 seconds, and over here it's 2 minutes, 3 seconds. This is where the social networking tool Flip comes into its own.
Okay. And what about resolution, though? The new Ultra HD does 1200 by 800, I think it is. And mobile phones are sort of heading that way, aren't they? They're really catching up very fast in terms of resolution. You're not looking at, for example, adding Wi-Fi capability to the Flip systems?
We have lots of technologies in the lab that we're looking at. And usually about Thanksgiving time, so November timeframe in America, and then about April, we will introduce new products, so 2 new products a year. They may have, they may not have Wi-Fi in the future.
It sounds like an obvious thing for a networking company to add wireless technology.
Indeed.
Would you like to see it in the Flip products?
Yes, I think it would be interesting to see it.
A tight-lipped Ray Sangster. We'll all wait to see what, if anything, Flip launches later this year. Now, though he may be on holiday, he's standing by for us right now. It's Bobby Johnson with this week's Hot Tech News.
Is Apple going to launch a tablet computer? Rumours have been circulating around the web for months, but new reports suggest that a device could be ready to hit the market as early this September and build on the success of the iPod and iPhone. American scientists have engineered bacteria to help solve mathematical problems in a breakthrough that could point towards the future of computing. Researchers found a way to use E. coli bacteria to solve the Hamiltonian path problem, a well-known mathematical puzzle. Microsoft has offered European regulators an olive branch by saying it's willing to include a so-called ballot screen in Windows that would encourage users to download alternative web browsers if they wanted. The screen would offer first-time users the chance to download other software than the company's dominant Internet Explorer. A few years ago, Friends Reunited was a British social networking sensation. But with rivals like Facebook stealing its thunder, the site could be worth just a smidgen of its former value. Reports suggest that ITV could be ready to sell the site to private equity company Oakley for just £15 million. That's a huge drop in value on the business that cost it £175 million in 2005. And finally, government officials have caught the Twitter bug. Although they seem to be lacking in the brevity that's made the 140-character messaging service such a hit. The guidelines for government departments using Twitter runs to 20 pages, or 5,382 words. That's almost 260 tweets.
Thanks, Bobby. There's more tech news all week on the site at guardian.co.uk/technology. Atomic Floyd may sound like a supergroup to rival Spinal Tap. It isn't, but it can claim musical connections that are world class. The company's the creation of James Strong, a young British entrepreneur, and they make good-looking, precision-built headphones from, among other materials, stainless steel. Strong's creative streak comes from his studies of industrial design, which he took up after he disagreed with how he was being taught architecture at Newcastle. He moved on to work for Philips around the world, which fed into his work at Atomic Floyd. Headphones are often the forgotten element when people buy expensive gadgets. They'll settle for the free included earpieces, or at a push, stump up £20 for something a bit more ambitious. But at £90 for their cheapest pair, I asked him, what's so special about your headphones?
Generally, when you look at headphones, there are two driving factors. One is a performance enhancement. You know, so there's definitely, you've got to deliver better performance and try and deliver better performance than everyone else. And then there's definitely this, what I call customization, which is with mobile phones and with iPhones and iPods, headphones is a great way. And you see it with the pouches as well. It's a great way to customize, you know, that I'm not like the 13 million other people who've bought an iPhone. This is a little bit like mine. And so sound was the foundation of all our products. We wouldn't ever make a product that didn't deliver what we would say outstanding sound. And then on top of that, we build elements like comfort, durability, security, making sure it doesn't fall out of your ear, and all the little things that annoy people about headphones. I mean, they are very small, but yeah, there's a lot of work that has to go into them to get them to work.
And it's very highly specialized manufacturing. You're talking about very, very small parts here, aren't you?
Very small parts. We're using watch tolerancing, so the gaps between the parts, and bringing metal and glass and plastic together and having kind of minute tolerancing on it is very, very difficult to do. So we've ended up partnering with people who make the bevels for some of the world's leading high-end watches. We use people who make eyewear. The titanium we use was really, really difficult to get right and took us maybe 6 or 8 months to keep on sampling. But it's starting to pay off, so it was worth the effort.
Why do you need that sort of precision? Why do you need that sort of micro-manufacturing accuracy?
We wanted to control the leakage, so the sound leakage. We wanted to control the tolerancing from that point of view. We also wanted it because we wanted to use stainless steel. And stainless steel, not only being a tougher material, also you can make a much thinner wall section, if that makes sense. So if you were moulding something out of plastic, you have to mould quite a large part for it to be durable. In stainless steel, you can go much, much thinner. So the benefit gives us, we end up with a much larger acoustic chamber on the inside. So there are many, many reasons or benefits for using the stainless steel that we do use.
So by having a stainless steel chamber, you actually have, in effect, a better sort of speaker surround within
correct,
your ears.
Correct. And you can do more, you can actually fit larger components inside because you have, yeah. The outside of a headphone generally has to stay a certain size because of the ear, if you want to make it comfortable. So by removing the material on the inside, we can then put more components inside and have more acoustic chambers. So that was one of the real leads for using the stainless steel. But obviously stainless steel is very difficult to join to another piece of stainless steel. So that's where the tolerancing came in.
With the headphones, I mean, effectively you're putting two speakers, you know, one in each ear, aren't you? And you have the diaphragm, which the larger it can be, the better it can produce a full range of sound.
Exactly.
A full frequency range. So what do you make the diaphragm out of? What's the difference there?
We coat it in with a chromium finish. So if you actually open them up, they'll be kind of slightly metallic on them. That allows it to recover faster. So then you get a kind of a crisper sound. You don't get so much distortion. But it also comes down to the shape of the mic. We call it the mic. And how reliably it can perform over a period of time. A lot of people, you can maybe make a pair of headphones that sound good for the first 4 months, but then they start to wear, and then people, you know, then they start cracking, or there are all sorts of problems. Quite often with headphones, when you put them in your ear, you put a lot of pressure on in the first when you actually insert them. So you can in some headphones you can actually create a vacuum on the inside, which then makes it hard. I mean, the headphone has to work harder to work against that vacuum. So we do a lot of little tricks to beyond fitting larger components in and coating things. We do a lot of little tricks in terms of making them more reliable over a longer period of time. And that can be coming down to allowing the component just to breathe and kind of be able to relax more. But this first range we've done, we've just gone out and with the knowledge we've had, just gone out and tweaked little elements. Essentially, like a car, we've just finely tuned it.
That's James Strong of Atomic Floyd, and you can find out more about his headphones at atomicfloyd.com. That's all for this week's programme. Thanks to James Strong of Atomic Floyd and Ray Sangster from Flip. And thanks to Bobby Johnson for breaking into his holiday to bring us this week's news. Pity that Jemima and Alex couldn't do the same. That's all for now. Leave us a comment at the site and get our tweets too. There's much more info on the site at guardian.co.uk/techweekly. I'm Charles Arthur. See you next Tuesday.